an oral history interview with Ed Ringer, conducted by David Lee, on 4/1/93 at his home. The subject of this interview is Ed Ringer. Okay, could you tell me something really about the Depression, your family?
Sure, about the Depression. Before the Depression began, my father was an instructor of mathematics at Jacksonville State College in Jacksonville, Alabama. He had three young children and decided that he needed a greater income than the instructor was being paid. So a cousin of his talked him into going into business with him in Birmingham, Alabama. So we moved to Birmingham. And just before the Depression struck, well, naturally after the Depression came along, while he not only lost the business, we lost the house and we lost the furniture, and about all we had left was an automobile and a few clothes. And it necessitated us, because of the lack of employment, the lack of business, to move in from my mother's parents, who lived in the country in Cherokee County, 7 miles southwest of Center, Alabama, on a farm that my grandfather and grandmother had homesteaded. So we lived with them for a few years until my father got a job teaching in Cherokee County, which was, my dad was a far less income than he had when he was an instructor in Jacksonville. But he was glad to get the job, and a lot of people didn't have jobs. And these were rather difficult times when you didn't buy anything you didn't have to, and you had to watch with your money, and even so, we had threadbare clothes and holes in our shoes, but we never went hungry, because one thing my grandfather Chisholm always said was that at his house, he always had plenty to eat, because he produced everything we ate, which was typical of what happened in the Depression. A lot of people who lived in the cities had to move in with some relatives from the country because they could produce the food, and in the city you didn't have a job, you couldn't buy food, so you went hungry. So even some that stayed in the city would come to the country for a month or two at a time and put up with their relatives in order to have some good food to eat. Living in the country at that time, I remember that you could always tell when your city relatives was going to come. It was about the time the garden came in and the young chickens had got to the frying stuff. That I remember about the Depression. It was a very difficult time. My uncle had a radio. We didn't have one. And we went together to hear Mr. Roosevelt, who became elected president, makes his famous fireside chats. And the radio was used very sparingly because it operated off of batteries. And you turn it on for a brief news period or some particular program that you wanted to listen to, and off it went. And I remember what a great event I remember in the Depression was that a fellow from Alabama by the name of Joe Lewis knocked out Max Spelling. I happened to hear that over the radio. That was one of the occasions we got to play it. So that was some of the things that I remember about the Depression. A lot of things that we have today, we just simply didn't exist back in those days. Plastics, for an example. Everything we pick up today seems to have some plastic in it. But back in those days, there wasn't any such thing. And, you know, living in the country, you didn't have electricity, you didn't have a telephone, did have a newspaper. That's something we did get every day. And it was a habit that I developed at a young age, was to read the newspaper. I still take two of them. So
that's good. Do you actually remember the stock market crash of 1929?
No, really, I was just about school age starting at the time that happened, and I'm sure I remember it, but it didn't make an impression on me as much as it would have if I had been a few years older. I just remember hearing my father and my grandfather talking about it. I do remember when they closed the banks and they changed the currency in the United States. A lot of people don't know that the present dollar bill is a downsized version of the one we had when we was on the gold standard. And It inspects such things as the sizes of the pocketbook that you carry. You couldn't get them. The old dollar bill and the bill fold that the man carries today.
Oh, wow.
So I can remember when the banks were closed, and I can remember when the money was changed, but we didn't have much money anyway, so that doesn't make a lot of difference with us.
So you can remember when the banks did close?
Yeah, I can remember when the banks were closed. Sure, yes. And there was a terrible anxiety on the part of all the people about whether the money they had would be any good, and whether they was going to lose what little they did have, and what they were going to do about paying for things.
How many members were in your family?
In my family? My parents, of course, and I have a brother and a sister, both who are younger than I. And they went along and did quite well, too. I remember one thing in the Depression. My brother, who is 5 years younger than I, contracted diphtheria. And we thought that this was usually a fatal disease, and we thought we were going to lose it, but he pulled through. But this is another thing that people today have that we didn't have. A lot of medicine that we have to cure diseases hadn't been discovered and put on the market back in those days, and doctors were quite limited about what medicines they could use to treat you with. And some of them, like Kalman, I think actually did more harm than good, but I had to take a few rounds of it anyway. So.
Do you remember any of the, when Roosevelt came in, do you remember any of the programs that he tried
to... Oh, yes, like the NRA and the WPA and those, yes, I do. And in fact, my mother's brother got a job when they had the WPA organized in the early 30s as being a supervisor on a road crew, and they didn't use much in the way of machinery. Most of this was to give a person a job, and the tool that he got was either a pick or a shovel. And we know that if you had a loader, a mechanical loader, you could have loaded the truck a lot sooner, and you could haul more and this sort of thing, but they were interested in putting people to work, and today you can see a parallel for what President Clinton is trying to do as to what President Roosevelt did. I think he got his idea from President Roosevelt, in my opinion.
With the Fireside Chats, how did they actually comfort you? With someone, did you actually feel like that you were being taken care of in a way, or someone was trying to do something for you?
As I remember, everybody had a great faith in President Roosevelt at the time. It was hard to find somebody who didn't vote for him, even though they may have voted for Mr. Hoover, because things had gotten rather drastic, and that was the only hope people had. And yes, when he spoke, everybody dropped what they were doing and got to a radio and listened, and if they couldn't, they surely got the next issue of the paper and read it word for word, maybe more than once.
So
President Roosevelt had a very charismatic personality. You could listen to him for a little while, and he was sort of like Billy Graham or some of his evangelists. He would have you coming down the aisle if you wasn't careful.
A lot of people have talked about his voice. They said that really his voice had like this comfort feel to it.
He was a very reassuring person. I think this is what made him great in the time of the Depression. Of course, he couldn't have gotten us out of the Depression all alone. We had to do it collectively, but he provided the assurance and the leadership. He wasn't afraid to try a new idea, and often his ideas weren't good ideas. Frankly, some of us off the wall, but at least they got people moving, and that was enough good ideas that we got out of the Depression. As an efficient way of getting things done, I wouldn't say that the WPA was very efficient, but it did the other purpose of it. It did put a lot of people to work. It gave people a confidence to go on and do things in the private sector thereafter, whereas they may it not have. That was the great malaise that was in the Depression. People, a lot of people just gave up. They didn't even try. There were people that were shifting from one place to another, particularly people who lived in Arkansas and Oklahoma, trying to move out to the West Coast. And they would get there, and there were sort of jalopies if they did get there. Some of them didn't always get them and stopped off along the way. And then, of course, there was a great disappointment when they got there, and they were very little, conditions were very little improved when they got there. I remember that people would squat on other people's land during the Depression. Now, this is something that would be unthought of today, but they were desperate. They had to do something. Outside of cities, they'd be just shanty towns. Now, we see this in other countries, but it's hard for us to realize that in the Depression, this sort of things began to happen in this country. Even as late as World War II, I remember people, we think street people in here, but I remember people living on the street in old piano boxes and cardboard cartons, hovering over the heat registers in that time. And, you know, most people don't think, they think this is a modern phenomenon, but it isn't. And I can remember people living along streams, just anywhere they can put up some junk and get some sort of a shelter, and lived in very primitive conditions. Living in the old abandoned houses. Of course, the landlord couldn't collect any rent. They didn't have any money to pay rent. They just moved in. These are all squatters.
You mentioned before about the people coming from the city to the country in a way. Did you notice a lot of people from cities actually moving down to the country next to you, or would they just come down like you said around, you know, the time food would come in and stuff?
Well, both phenomena happened. There were people who came for briefly, just for a little help, and went back to the city. There were people who were disillusioned with the city and moved back to the country to stay. The whole problem is that the people that were mobile were the people who had the least. You had people moving from the city, by and large, they could not purchase land in the country. They could not share crop because they did not have anything except their labor to produce. If they did share crop, the landowner would have to furnish a dwelling, have to furnish their food, their clothing, and have to furnish the equipment for the farm, the seed, the fertilizer, and all. And then at the end of the year, they wondered why they didn't have anything.
The sharecropping thing that you just mentioned, did it become more prevalent during the Depression? Did more people...
I think that probably more people started sharecropping during the Depression than they were just prior to it. But sharecropping has always been part of agriculture.
Right.
And as far back as I can remember hearing anything about it, there have always been some people who made a living at farming, but they didn't have any way to do it. They didn't have a startup capital. And even back in those days, it took something to start up. And I have seen the figures on it. Currently, I think that if you're farming, it will take you each year, if you're successful, you can put away about that money by 7.5 acres. Well, you know, back in my grandparents' days, you could get land just by homestead, but that is, you live on it, build a dwelling, you don't live on it. Both of my grandparents came near farmland, or at least part of it, in this manner. And I think what they did, they obtained about 40 acres. I think that's what you could homestead. And then as they developed that, they bought adjacent land to get more land in there, because certainly both of them had more than 40 acres. But the sharecropper became more prevalent during the Depression, best of my recollection. Because before the Depression, you had people leaving the farm after World War I and going to the city and getting a job in industrial plants and this sort of thing. So you just had the normal amount of people that lived in the rural area that wanted to live in the rural area from starting out and continuing these sharecroppers. And of course, there was a group of people, and mainly these were people that were in the substrata of the economics situation. They started out as sharecroppers and they never rose above it. And it didn't matter whether they were white or black. And of course, further south here is more predominantly sharecroppers were black, or they were down in Texas and Louisiana and along there, they might be Mexican Indian. But